I wonder what we're talking about today. Okay. All right, here we go.
Oh, I guess we shall find out, like, right.
Good thing I'm ready.
About now. I don't even know who's in charge down there.
I see what you're doing there, Drew. At least that's who's on.
Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rosdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. None of us, as we like to say on this pod, because the producers make us, is as smart as all of us.
It's true. I'm Molly Wood. Thanks for joining us. We are indeed going to get smart together because you're going to ask us a bunch of smart questions. And our wonderful producer, Marissa Cabrera and Donna Tam, have looked up a bunch of smart answers. That's not true. Sometimes we know stuff ourselves. What I'm trying to say is that it's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday? An entire episode dedicated to answering your questions.
We are going to start with my favorite story maybe of the year so far, which is completely serious, but at the same time, you're like, oh my goodness. This one comes from Jenny in Virginia. She writes asking about the Suez Canal. Here's what she says. Please tell us everything about this ship stuck in the Suez Canal. How does this happen? How does this ship get stuck? More relevantly, what are the implications of this? You've already discussed the traffic jams at California's ports. What does this backup mean in terms of gestures in the air wildly? Everything. Just please make us smart about this. It was not on my 2021 bingo card. Oh, man.
Like, so, don't things just seem to be getting more and more absurd? Like, I don't know, GameStop. NFTs, and now, like, this giant ship stuck sideways in Suez Canal. It's, like, bonkers.
So, there is a huge, ginormous cargo ship stuck, and this thing is 1,300 feet long, in the Suez Canal, stuck sideways. And what happened, apparently, was there was some kind of wind or sandstorm, which my producer on Marketplace, Nancy Fargali, told me, because her mother, who is Egyptian, has been listening to Egyptian media, they think it was a sandstorm that drove, and she told me this last night. I was ahead of the power curve because I got Egyptian. I know an Egyptian.
Look at you, the inside source.
I know. It drove this ship into the banks of the Suez Canal. And my favorite technical part of this is if you look at these big giant ships in a schematic or a drawing, or sometimes if they're in dry dock or something, they have these ginormous bows on them under the waterline where there's like sonar and gear and stuff. And it's called a bulbous bow. And if you look at the way this ship is, it basically like pranged itself into the side. And its bow, this huge like, you know, 10, 12, 15, 20 foot long thing, is stuck in the side of the canal. And that's why it's stuck. It's literally stuck.
Yeah. And it's stuck sideways. I mean, it's jackknifed into this canal. By the way, bulbous bow is now how I'm going to start describing my COVID weight gain. Because I feel like that is both simultaneously a little on the nose and hilarious and pulls in this new favorite story ever, even though this is the part. So if you are not extremely online, you won't know that this has spawned a million memes that are all hysterical. And the main reason it has spawned a million memes is because you have this story, this photo of this ship that's like, I think with all the containers on it, like as tall as the Eiffel Tower, right?
Yes, I mean, that is correct.
Big.
It's as long as the Eiffel Tower is tall. Yeah.
I mean, what in the what? So it's large is what we're saying. And then in order to try and, you know, scooch it a little less sideways, they sent two guys and a bulldozer. And so there's this amazing photo of just like this
like
tiny speck of humans and the teeny tiny little Tonka toy bulldozer. And they're just sort of staring up at the ship. And every, you know, people are just like, yeah, like I'm the bulldozer is my calendar and the ship is all the things, whatever. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But the part that's not funny, of course, is that weirdly, we had already been discussing on this show, because our topics range far and wide, cargo ship traffic jams and how all of this new demand has caused them to back up and it's slowing down shipments of all these things. And the traffic jam that's resulting from this has evidently already caused crude oil prices to climb 4%. Mm-hmm. They're talking about like if it stays stuck for, you know, a few hours, but God help us, a few days, it could create weeks-long problems in terms of food, furniture, clothes, shoes, exercise equipment, electronics, car parts, carpets. I'm reading from NBC News, but a lot of stuff.
Yeah, all this stuff that goes to Europe. And so here's the deal, right? And you have to look at a map to really appreciate this. But you can take a shortcut from the Red Sea up to the Mediterranean through the Suez Canal, or you can go 2,700 miles around the Cape of Good Hope and South Africa. And that's really, really challenging because time mm-hmm. is literally money for all of the stuff that is on these ships. And with 10 to 12% of global cargo going through the Suez Canal, you can see how if, as I saw today on a wire service, I can't remember which one, if they have put a pause on this until Thursday to figure out how to do it, that's, you know, another 24, 36 hours of nothing moving through this waterway. And it's just, Whoa. It's so amazing. And it's about the fragility and the hair's breadth that we have in our global supply chain right now. It's crazy, crazy and amazing mm-hmm. all at the same time.
And apparently anyway, the hair's so breadth we have in the Suez Canal, which got expanded in 2015, right. but is not.
Right.
Well, so they're rerouting some smaller ships, but yeah, it's pretty bonkers. I will say that a thing that occasionally comes up as a sort of not the worst outcome of climate change and warming is the potential that some Arctic sea routes will open up, which is sort of interesting. I mean, it's like obviously the worst thing because that melting ice is going to kill us all. It's like super bad. But it is this sort of interesting knock on, I guess.
We did Stephen Beer did a series for us on Marketplace. It's got to be like 10 or 12 years ago now about exactly that. We called it Frozen Assets. It was Stephen talking about the economic upside, right? Forget the geopolitical and strategic disaster that it would be. The economic upside of the Northwest Passage freeing up all year round. People clobbered us. We were like, no. We're doing a story on the economic upside because it's going to happen, and here's what's going to happen.
Right, it's going to happen
because of it. And they were like, how dare you talk about this? And I was like, oh.
Well, you can see how afraid I am to even say it, but at the same time, it's like,
I know,
it's going to happen. I don't know. Everything has an equal and opposite, reaction. By the way, I'm going to peel back the curtain a little bit for our listeners and say that somewhat late in the day, our executive producer, Don and Tam, was like, do you guys want to do this story? I don't know if you're going to be, I'm not sure if you're prepared for it. Like, should we just toss this in? And as you can see, we could probably do like an hour on this, no problemo. Like, we're just like more.
Yeah, we're going.
More it's crazy cargo
story.
Ship stuff.
It hits like everything. It's craziness. Yeah.
Everything. It's amazing. All right, let's turn.
Okay. Let us. Yes.
Let's just keep the absurdity train rolling. On to the next, the latest crypto trend.
Hi, y'all. This is Rin from Huntsville, Alabama. Love your show. I'm calling to ask about your opinions on NFTs, non-fungible tokens. My husband is very intrigued from an artist's viewpoint. I'm fairly skeptical. Please make us smart. Thanks.
I love y'all said in an actual Southern accent as opposed to me just saying, hey, y'all. That makes my heart glad. NFTs, non-fungible tokens, digital assets, one sort or another. We've done a little bit on it on Marketplace, and I did a piece today where I sold one of my tweets as a non-fungible token. Basically, blockchain-based digital thing. You don't get anything in real life. Very trendy, very profitable for some people. There was an artist a week or two ago who sold an NFT of every image he's ever made for $69 million. Mm-hmm. I still think they're just a quirky little weirdness, to be honest with you.
I mean, somebody recently described it as the monetization of FOMO, like only the latest incarnation of the monetization of FOMO, because much like Bitcoin or rare wines, it's selling scarcity and it's selling exclusivity and it is selling only the idea that you own a thing, even though everybody else can see the same thing, if it's a digital copy of that thing, it could be, but it is anything digital. So there's actually, I'm going to send this tweet to our digital producer, Tony Wagner, who is not an NFT.
We should sell Tony as an NFT, see what happens.
I know, right? I was going to say that, and then I was like, that's messed up. There's a whole back and forth with Cameron Winklevoss, because of course these two twins are they're big on it. They're the guys who originally founded Facebook, or apparently, or co-founded it with Zuckerberg. And there's this big, like, lofty tweet. They liberate art. Traditional art, according to Cameron Winklevoss, is confined to time and space. And you have to be in the right city and go to a museum and go to someone's house. And this way you can, like, anyone with an internet connection can view them, right? And then someone responds and is like, well, how is looking at an NFT as an experience any different than just looking at a picture online?
Right.
And Cameron replies, well, if a picture or video of traditional art was actually compelling, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And someone's like, yeah, right, okay. But if it's digital, how is it a different experience looking at the NFT version of the picture versus the other picture? And he says, do you think looking at a copy is the same as the original? And then someone responds and says, the digital copies are identical, so yes. And then finally, a third person jumps in here and says, I'm really starting to understand how a marginally clever nerd stole a multi-billion company right out from under his nose. And it's the greatest tweet I ever saw. And honestly, that thread is like all you need to know, Ren. Like, that's all you need to know. I'm sure your husband is super intrigued because I know a lot of, like, excitable boys who are excited about the concept of being able to make a bunch of money on a thing that no one else can own but everyone else can see. If he can make his money now, go for it, because this is, like, all going to collapse. It's like a pyramid scheme. Come on.
I'm inclined to agree, for sure. That said, there is a $69 bid on my first ever tweet in which I said the stock market is not the economy. So, you know.
There you go. Get your money now.
Yeah.
And then get out.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Next up is a question from Tech Lee in California, and it is a two-parter.
Okay.
Hi, Kai and Molly. I'm a clinical pharmacist for Walgreens Pharmacy inside Children's Hospital, Los Angeles. I'm a pandemic time listener, so I started listening to you guys during this past year, and I love all the content that you bring. I have two things for the What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. Have you guys caught on to the Nashville-style hot chicken sandwich trend? And two, what does the U.S. have for tools to get out of this $21 trillion debt?
No, and the keyboard. Wait, what? But I do want to know more about the first part.
I have not had a Nashville-style hot chicken sandwich, and I don't know of the trend. And maybe that's just me because I'm not hip. Holy cow. Man, that's something.
I'll look that up while you tell them about the keyboard.
So here's the deal. We owe in this economy something. It's actually like $28 trillion right now, maybe just shy of $28 trillion. Obviously, the last $8 trillion of that, plus or minus, has been since the Trump tax cuts of 2017 and then, of course, the pandemic, right? So spending money in a pandemic is not in and of itself a bad thing. The way to get out of it, truly, is economic growth. This will be much less of a problem if we can grow the economy at a sustained rate that exceeds the level of the growth of the debt. The catch, of course, is that we are not showing any signs, number one, of that growth, and number two, of being willing to change our fiscal behavior, which is to say, spend less and maybe tax ourselves a little more. And look, I know I've said on this podcast a whole bunch of times that it's really interesting and a good thing right now that Joe Biden has said, yes, let us do deficit spending. Let us borrow money to pay for economic crisis fixing right now. But that cannot go on forever. And that's just not me. It's the CBO. It's virtually everybody, right? So right now is not the time to worry about the debt, but the debt is not to be ignored. The catch is economic growth. Full stop. Full stop. And that's why it's worth spending money now to start to work that debt down.
And a little plug for yesterday's show, closing the tax gap.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Will help.
$7.5 trillion.
Yeah. In fact, the GAO actually proposes as one of its immediate steps to help address the situation, narrowing the tax gap. So there you go. And thank you to our producers for also educating us on the Nashville hot chicken sandwich trend.
Yeah, no
apparently,
joke.
It's
Look
been all over Southern California. It's like right there. Yeah, you could do it. At least, oh my gosh. At least 7 hot chicken sandwich places opened up in 2020 in Orange County alone. So I can't believe I'm going to ask this because I'm going to get a bunch of emails and I just don't know. Is the Popeye's chicken Nashville hot chicken? Like, is it a different kind of hot chicken? Because like a lot of hot chicken has been happening. Now I got to look this up.
Yeah.
Dang it. Well, we'll find out. And
while you do that, I will get us out of here. How about that?
Good idea.
Man. All right, we're done. That was it?
Ducking it.
Duck, yeah. I just don't know. What do you want to know? Wednesday has come to a close on this Wednesday afternoon. Back tomorrow. It'll be Thursday, hollowed out, or perhaps not. Don't know. Questions, comments, makemesmart@marketplace.org, and we will eventually get them on the pod. We hope.
It's true. See you tomorrow. I don't want a chicken sandwich. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital non-fungible producer. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters.
That's pretty good.
And the explainers that you can access on your smart speaker by asking it to make me smart.
Drew Jostad was in charge today in the studios in downtown LA. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez did our theme music. Donna Tam is the senior producer. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. This is the point where I click over to the Slack channel to see what they're saying about things on this podcast today.
Tony says it's his favorite credit yet. So you're welcome, buddy. You'll always be non-fungible to me. And Donna Tam, I accidentally made an executive producer, and I'm not sorry. She deserves it.
She's in line for a bump.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.